Okay, thank you all for being here today. I'm going to go ahead and get started right on time because we got a lot of ground to cover. My name's Deanne Davis, and I'm so glad you're here today. I'm super passionate about the topic of homosexuality. The reason I'm up here is I've been walking with people who struggle with same-sex attraction for 20 years. I was the women's director at Living Hope, a ministry that helped people leave homosexuality. I served there for 10 years. And so that's basically been my life calling, is walking with women who are experiencing same-sex attraction, transgender, a variety of sexual abuse and other sexual issues. And so I think this is the issue of this generation, right? Like, if you have a phone or a TV, you're probably aware of that. That's probably why you're here. And so I'm so glad you're here. And I want to share with you, at Living Hope, we had an in-house and an online ministry. And so we had over 8,000 members from over 170 countries. So I say that to say, just my experience is not white people that are 25 in Dallas, and that's, you know, everyone looked the same. It's like, no, we worked with people from all over the world, all different ages. And so we saw, as people that came through us, or to us, Living Hope's been around, I think, like 35 years now, that there were a lot of commonalities in the stories of the men and women who came to us experiencing same-sex attraction. Most of them had really similar stories. And so we developed this presentation that I'm going to do for you now to kind of give people some handles for why they might be struggling, what might be going on in their life that might be driving some of these attractions and feelings they had. All the best science does not indicate a person is born gay. That's what you'll see in the media, but you'll notice they never cite a study. If there was a study that proved a person was born gay, we would all know the name of it. I mean, it would be in every Lady Gaga song. It'd be on people's bumper stickers. Like, we would all know what that study is, but you'll notice they never cite one because there isn't one. The best research shows that there's a host of factors that contribute. Environmental, there could be some biological factor, as in, like, you know, a hormonal bath when they're in the womb, but they don't really know. They're just kind of speculating. They don't really know. No matter what, if they came out with a study tomorrow that said a person is born gay, we would say, hey, welcome to the club. You're born a sinner, just like the rest of us. You were born with a distorted sexuality that you were told by God to steward in light of the word of God and to be faithful to that. So even if they came out with a study that proved you were born gay, it wouldn't change the Bible's stance on it or our stance on it as Christians. But we don't actually believe you were born gay, and we do believe there are contributing factors in environments. And so if you're a parent here and your kids are little, I'm so glad you're here because you can hear some things you can do to reinforce their gender, to help them be healthy. And then if you're here because you have a kid who's struggling or expressed that, one, I'm sorry, that's a tough, complicated situation to navigate, but I want you to know it's not an impossible situation to navigate because our sexual attractions are not the sum total of who we are. They are not definitive of who we are. A feeling I feel is not an identity of who I am, despite what the world says. This idea that your sexual attractions define you is a new idea for 6,000 years of human history. This has not been how people viewed sexual activity. Homosexuality was viewed as an activity. It wasn't even viewed as an orientation. That is more a Freudian idea that is seeped into culture. And so I want to talk to you about that today. And then I'll read to you 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11. There's 7 or 8 passages that deal with homosexuality, either specifically or indirectly. This is one of my favorites because it talks about the hope. It says, 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11. Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. That's the end of verse 10. So if you see that list, most of us at some point in our life have fit one of those, right? So it's not singling out gay-identified people. But in 11 it says, and such were some of you. But you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. So we see God's been saving people from homosexuality for literally thousands of years, freeing and redeeming and healing people. So this is not a life that a person is condemned to just because they have the feelings. And I think we can do things in the lives of our children to help reinforce their gender so that they can be less confused. And then today, in today's day and age, people want to confuse kids on their gender, period. What that is at all. And so a lot of this talk is geared toward people who've classically struggled with same-sex attraction. And by that, I mean there's a big, rapid onset right now of identification with the LGBT community. in the Gen Z and younger, it's like 25% of 18 to 25 year olds identify in the LGBTQ plus category, which is crazy. But that's a social phenomenon. And so this whiteboard illustration I'm going to do is about people who have, if you talk to them, they'll say, from my earliest moment, I have felt gay. This is what it's talking about. I'm going to go through the women's model first and then the men's. Both of these are one-hour presentations that I'm going to cram into to 1 hour, hopefully. So there's probably not going to be a lot of time for questions. I'm sorry. I'm happy to stay after. I have a breakout right after this on talking to your kids about homosexuality. So happy to stick around and talk and answer questions in those 15 minutes. But we're going to be flying. I'm going to be talking as fast as I can. And I'm sorry. This just is too much content for 1 hour. So, okay. So female same-sex attraction. Okay. Well, female sexuality, as far as attractions, is a lot more fluid than male sexuality, right? Straight women frequently get into gay relationships, especially teenage girls, college girls, having never anticipated, never thought about it before. They make best friends and become emotionally dependent with another girl who struggles, and she starts meeting her emotional needs, and she can drift into same-sex attraction. Because women's sexuality is tied up in our emotions. You know, men's sexuality is far more tied to their visual acuity. Women, it's tied to our emotions. Most, you know, women do struggle with pornography. That's not something that doesn't exist. But in women's relational, in their relationships, they're usually going more for that emotional connection. And so if you have over here completely lesbian in attraction, and if you have over here completely hetero, and here you have bi, most women, if they're honest, they're somewhere on the spectrum, but aren't on either extreme of the spectrum, but are somewhere in between. For instance, I don't struggle with same-sex attraction. That's never been my struggle. That's not why I came into this ministry. But I'd place myself here. I'm not incapable of it. If I were to be boundaryless with another woman and seek all of my emotional needs to be met in her, that would be really unwise, and I'm not above falling into sin. Galatians talks about that. Be careful when you're helping your brother in sin that you don't fall into the same sin. And so it's not impossible for straight women to get into gay relationships. Almost all the women who came to me had either their straight best friend who they'd gotten into a relationship with, or they were the straight best friend that had gotten into the relationship with their struggling friend. Most of the women who came to me put themselves in this category, and they would move at various times in their lives. And this is important to know, because sometimes parents would come to me and say, well, this is so weird that my daughter's gay. She had a boyfriend in high school. And I'm like, that could have been for a lot of reasons. One, she could have genuinely been attracted to him, and now she's attracted to this girl in her life who's entered in. It could be that she didn't really like him and was trying to see if he would make her gay feelings go away. It could be that she just dated him so that y'all would think she didn't have gay feelings. There's a lot of reasons, but that's one of the things, if your kid comes out to you and is like, hey, I have these feelings, that's an important thing to know, is to go, okay, I need to ask questions and listen and ask them, what are they really telling me? Especially when the culture is pumping so much ideology into them on this topic. And so attractions for women can shift. I'm not talking about their sex, their gender. That does not shift, but attractions can be very shifting for women. And so a girl, she's born into a family, hopefully, and she's going to be born to a dad and a mom. And she's going to have two main personality types. She's either going to be a tomboy girl or a girly girl. Now, one doesn't mean she's going to be gay or straight. Like I said, I don't struggle with same-sex attraction, but I'm as tomboy girl as you could possibly get. You can partially tell from my handwriting. You know, I love sports almost more than any of the women who came to see me. I love sports. I watch sports all of the time. I have a new roommate, and she's like, every day she's like, oh, is this your team? I'm like, no, like I don't even care who wins. I just watch sports all of the time. It's just my interest, it's my hobby, it's my personality. I don't care about shopping. I don't care about makeup. Like, I just don't care. That's not how God designed me. And that is great. That's not indicative of my sexual attractions later in life. That's just who God made me to be. And I can be a tomboy girl. What really matters is my biblical femininity. And a friend and I are doing femininity. It's a hard one to talk and spell at the same time. It's not my biblical femininity. And a friend and I are doing a breakout session at 11:30 for an hour on biblical femininity. Strongly recommend you to come if you have a daughter, or even if you don't, just because we're going to talk to you about how feminism has impacted our culture and the way we view what is a woman supposed to be. But this mom is this girl's biggest example of femininity, for better or worse. So a brief explanation of what I'm talking about femininity. I'm not talking about, does she like shopping? Does she like playing with the basketball, or does she like playing with dolls? I'm not talking about that. What does the Bible say? And so at Living Hope, now we're going to talk in different ways about biblical femininity in 2 hours, because we're going to go into a deep biblical deep dive on just the topic of femininity in general. But I'm going to talk about the 5 aspects I would talk about specifically with women who struggle, because those were the aspects I would see them detach from, which is what ultimately would drive their sexual attractions. So the 5 I would talk to them about are relational, responsive, nurturing, vulnerable, and beautiful. So relational, we are created for the purpose of relationship. So women are excellent in relationship. We are relationally intuitive in a way that men are not always. That doesn't mean a man can't have relational intuition. It just means women, by and large as a group, are far more intuitive in that. We were created as the helper for the male. So the whole purpose of our existence was to help Adam, which is the second one, responsivity. We were created to be responders to men. Men have the initiating sexual member. We have the receptive sexual member. Our bodies image this. Men are to be the leaders, the initiators, the pursuers. We're the receivers, recipients, responders. 3, nurturing. Our bodies are wired to nurture, to give life through our uterus, our womb, breasts, to nurture a baby. Again, our function follows our form. You can look at our bodies and see that we were built for that. And then 4, vulnerability. Scripture describes us as the weaker vessel. It's not saying we're pathetic and useless. It's saying it's like fine china and a thermos. Both hold liquid, but you handle them differently. They both have their place, but you handle them differently. So as women, if we're strong women, we can be vulnerable and have a gentle and quiet spirit. And we don't have to have big, thick walls to protect us, to keep out pain. And then 5, beauty. As women, we really long to be found beautiful. Even the most hardcore butch lesbian woman who straps down her breasts and wears men's clothing and shaves her head and would be offended if you told her she's beautiful, she really longs for the one woman to see past the armor, past the walls, into her heart of hearts and think she is lovely and beautiful. And she longs for that and she aches for that. Think of how much money is spent in the beauty industry, the plastic surgery industry. Think of issues like bulimia and anorexia, all of these things. Women ache to be beautiful. And so when I talk about femininity, these are the things I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, does she like to carry her purse or not? That is a social assignment that is not in the Bible. And so when women who struggle with lesbianism detach from femininity, how are they doing that? So relational, well, they'll either become emotionally enmeshed with another woman. They'll go off one side of the cliff and try to find all of their identity in another woman to fulfill them. Or they can go to utter independence and be prickly, you know, yikes, she is unapproachable because she's been hurt, she's been wounded. She doesn't want to be hurt and wounded. Relationships provide hurt, so she wants to be independent. 2, and I know I'm flying through these, please forgive me, but we've got limited time. 2, responsivity. She's rejecting responsivity to males. She's saying, I don't need a man. I don't want a man. I'm going to do my own thing and maybe be a male, a pseudo male in the life of another woman. 3, nurturing. She can be an over-nurturer, very consuming and controlling and manipulating and seeking to control other women. Or she can shed all nurturing affect and be more robotic in her interactions, or gruff, tough, does not want to appear nurturing. 4, this is usually the biggest one women are detaching from, is that vulnerability, that gentle and quiet spirit. They don't want to be a weaker vessel. So many of the women I worked with, the vast majority, experience sexual abuse. Now, I would never recommend going up to a gay person and saying to them, oh, well, you were probably sexually abused, right? Like, they find that very offensive, especially if they are not a Christian and they identify as gay. Because what that communicates to them is you are saying, let's say they were sexually abused, if they find a lot of pride in being gay, if you tie those together, their most painful, shameful secret they don't want anyone to know about or talk about, and then you say, oh, that's defining who you are, they take that very personally. You might be right, but it is not an effective thing to say, and it will cause a lot of harm and follow-up that you just don't want to have to deal with. So you can know internally, high chance they were abused, but I would not bring it up to them. I would let them share it with you. But a lot of these women were abused, and so they're like, I'm not going to have that happen to me again. I'm going to work out like a man works. I'm going to gain 40 pounds to hide my feminine appearance. The government tried to do a study on why obesity was so common among lesbians, and they spent, of course, you know, tens of millions of dollars because it's the government, and I'm like, I can tell you in 30 minutes. Like, you don't need, they're hurt, they're wounded, and their feminine form was used against them. They don't want to be vulnerable. They want to communicate a presence of power and intimidation. They don't want to communicate a presence of you can hurt me. And then lastly, beauty. A lot of women detach in lesbianism from outward physical beauty, and they seek this false masculine. And again, that's to protect them. And you might go, well, I have some gay friends, and they're totally feminine, really beautiful. And that's a thing, too. But a lot of women use that beauty to manipulate and control other people. And they're not operating in a God-honoring feminine beauty. They're operating in a manipulating way, using that as power to gain to gain sexual power over people a lot of the time. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about femininity. So tomboy girl, girly girl, either can struggle. Obviously, most of the girls who classically struggle come out of the tomboy category. And this is one of the reasons for this is we have non-gender conforming interests. So when other little girls are out playing with their dolls and playing tee, we're playing ball, we're playing with the boys. You know, we don't play kickball, baseball, basketball, football. It's like, why play house? No one wins. I don't really understand. What is the point? And so tomboy girls can develop a sense of what we would call being other than. And we're not less than other girls, we're just different. So if you have a mom who doesn't understand that femininity and being a girly girl are not synonymous, and she tries to force this square peg into this round hole, this girl's gonna feel like, well, if that's what femininity is, I can't live up to that. So there's something wrong with me as a girl. The mom needs to understand, hey, like for me, I look just like my dad. I have his same sense of humor, same personality. I am very dissimilar from my mom, but I am still more like my mom because my mom is a girl. And that is more definitive of who I am than if I like basketball or if I have a quick wit versus liking cheesy humor. Like, me being a woman is wired into my DNA, so I'm still more like mom. And so a lot of tomboy girls, just because of circumstance or personality, feel other than. So many of our women feel like that. And that's going to cause later on when they've developed and they look back to when they felt other than as a little kid, a lot of times with a revisionist history, they're going to read back their now adult sexuality into feeling this. And they're going to go, I always knew I was different. I never fit in with the other girls. And then they go to, you know, they go to college and they meet this big group of lesbian women who all love basketball, all don't care about shopping. They don't care about that. And they're like, wow, I've never felt like I fit in so much with other girls, and they're all gay. And they're like, oh, this must be because I'm gay. But there's other factors that play into that as well. So very important for moms to understand what biblical femininity is and to model this and teach this to their daughters. So both girls, regardless of personality type, need three things we call the three A's. That's affirmation, attention, and affection. And they need girls, and boys are different in this. When we get to boys, boys are actually way easier to raise. So this, you're going to go, wow, she's talking about the girls a long time. And that's because women are way more complicated than men. You, as you all know, we were created from a living being. Men were created from dirt. The guy's model is so much cleaner and like easier. So when you're like, don't get worried about the time proportion. And so with guys, that, you know, their connection is going to be with their dad. Girls need to connect with both parents. And so what does this look like from dad? Affirmation from dad. It's loving words of affection her whole life. I love you. You're beautiful. You're precious to me. I care for you. He needs to speak it to her. He doesn't need to go, ah, she knows I love her. I don't got to tell her. It's like, no, kids should not be required to logically deduce their parents love them. They should be hearing it, seeing it, firmly rooted in it. He should affirm her for who she is beyond her skill set. If she makes straight A's or straight F's, she's still dad's cherished daughter. He loves her. If she makes 10 baskets or has 10 turnovers, he doesn't need to be the coach on the sideline berating her. He needs to affirm her for who she is. Attention from dad. He needs to give her attention as a girl, as someone other than himself, because they are not the same. He is different than her because he's her dad. She is not the son he never had. She's not daddy's little boy. Don't ever say that to your daughter. I don't care how much she likes basketball or softball. And if that's your point of connection, sports, that's great. She's not the son you never had. We don't want to speak that over her. And going back to this for a moment, we believe God has given man a power and authority in his voice. I say we as in at Living Hope, not as Watermark. I'm not going to speak for Watermark on that. But that God has given man a power and authority in his voice in a way that's different than women. In Genesis 1, God speaks and creates out of the chaos, ex nihilo. And then he assigns Adam with the task in Genesis 2:19, name the animals. Then Eve comes, he names her woman. Then he names her Eve in Genesis 3:20. Then we see in the patriarchs male headship and authority in the church. And so we see men have this power to speak. And so kids often and usually live out the words their fathers have spoken over them for better or for worse. An illustration is, it's like a child is like a seed planted in soil that grows into a plant, and the father is the trellis that plant grows up. How he directs her with his words and input in her life will in many ways determine the way she will view herself and the path she will take. So super important, that affirmation. And then the attention he needs to give her, speak into her how she is so different than him, but that's a beautiful, cherished, lovely thing, that they are not identical in every way. He also needs to impart to her a sense of protection. She needs to feel like, look, I don't have to protect myself. I don't have to wall up. My daddy will protect me. He needs to validate her feelings and learn her to teach her it's okay to feel and okay to express those feelings in healthy ways. We don't act based on our feelings. They aren't definitive of who we are. But he needs to pay attention when she's hurting and in positive ways. And then affection. He needs to give her that healthy physical touch. We tell dads and moms, you can't love on, hug on, kiss on, play with your kids too much. We need touch to be healthy individuals. And if little kids do not receive healthy touch, they will not be able to distinguish unhealthy touch. One, they'll be starved for healthy touch. And then when someone comes along and provides that touch, they won't know how to distinguish it as something bad. So super important for that. Mom, affirmation from mom. Mom also needs to speak loving words to her. But mom primarily needs to model affirmation of biblical femininity. The little girl needs to grow up going, I want to be like mom. She's strong, smart, loving, caring, kind. She's capable. She rocks the house. That's who I want to be when I grow up. I want to be like her. Mom has to model that it's good to be like her. That's so important, and we'll get to why in a moment. Attention, mom also needs to validate her feelings. Mom also needs to, in that attention, like model her own feelings in healthy ways. So the little girl learns how to do that, what that looks like. And then feminine touch, she needs to give her that to her daughter, or her daughter will crave it growing up. She will crave feminine touch. Moms also teach their daughters grooming habits. A lot of the women I worked with, man, no one ever taught them how to buy a real bra. And then when you're 38, you're not going to go to the cute little girl working at Dillard's as a 38-year-old and go, hey, I actually don't know how to buy anything that's not a sports bra. Can you help me? Like, they're very humiliated. They weren't armed with these tools. They don't have to love makeup, but they should have the opportunity to learn about the world of women and what women wear. What women wear to showers or wear to this or that. Moms need to equip their daughters with these tools so they feel like they can fit in the world of women, even if they, you know, are like, I prefer pants to dresses, that's okay. But they don't need to feel like they can't do it because they don't really know what they're doing. And that's more common than you would think. So our cheesy little illustration is, if the girl gets everything she needs, she blossoms, she becomes a butterfly, she flourishes, comes out of her cocoon. Yeah. So what happens in the life of a woman who struggles? Where are the breakdowns? So affirmation, 18 million kids are in single-parent homes right now. So dad's not even in the picture. That could be divorce, death, he was never in the picture. There's a lot of reasons why that might happen. But these wings of this butterfly are just gone from the start because he's just not there. Maybe dad is there. He is angry, controlling, an alcoholic. There's a lot of things that can happen. And again, if you're in here because your kid struggles, I don't want you one thing I want to point I want to make. I'm not saying this is what your family looked like. Like, you're an abuser if your kid struggles. No, I am not saying that. I'm saying this is an amalgamation of thousands of people's stories we have heard. And so I would do this presentation for every woman, when she came in first thing, and then after I did it, I would say, okay, let's look at where the elements are evident in your story. And no woman fit every little check mark. So if you're here and you're like, my kid struggles, I didn't do that, it's like, I believe you, and that's likely true. Because one, our interpretations of our environment and our responses to them are our responsibility, regardless of what's going on around us. And two, it doesn't have to be all the extremes I'm listing. So again, if you're in that category, hey, no, this is not a blame game. This is not accusing you of having been participating in any of those deeds. It's saying that is what a lot of gay people, or people who identify as gay, a lot of their experience has included these elements. And so I'm looping them all in one presentation, which is not going to match anybody exactly. So he might be abusive. He might be an alcoholic. A lot of gay identified people, that is a part of their background. And so he's angry, he's hateful, he's mean. Or he's just passive. He's the golf dad. He's the workaholic dad. So he is not a bad guy, but he's just not a present guy. So she's still not getting these things she needs. Attention from dad. Maybe he doesn't protect her. Maybe she's sexually abused. A lot of women, they go and they tell their parents about their sexual abuse and they don't believe them. And a lot of times that's a worse wound than the abuse itself. Because it's like, man, I can't trust anybody. I can't tell anybody. Because I thought they would be there for me to protect me, and they weren't. Or they'll resent their father. He might not even know the abuse. They'll resent him for not having been there to protect him in the first place. And so she can have a breakdown in her relationship with her dad, and he might not even know something's happened to be able to do anything about it, to fix it. Maybe he gives her the wrong kind of attention when she's has feelings. So don't cry. I'll give you something to cry about. Why are you crying? So she learns to be a human, to express emotion, is to be insulted, rejected. So I'm going to lock it down. I'm going to seal off my heart. I'm not going to express my emotions. I'm going to kill the expression of emotion. And you can only do that so long until you start to have to kill the emotions themselves. And you have to bury them. And because they're going to leak out. And a lot of the women I would work with, that's what they would call crying, leaking. Because to them, it wasn't like a valid expression of pain. It was like, something's leaking out that I can't control. I'm trying to keep it in, and it's leaking. And I got to stop it. And so I'm going to avoid situations that might make me cry and continue to harden. Maybe he gives her attention, but as a boy, not as someone other than himself, but as the son he never had. So she begins to feel like the only way to get attention from my dad is to perform on the field, is to be like him, is to be closer to him than my mom. Sometimes dads will be close to their daughters at the expense of the relationship with the mom. Oh, your mom on her tirade again, you know, and they will be close in a way that makes her mom feel other than her. So there can be a breakdown there in the affection if he's physically abusive, sexually abusive. Some men, they don't want to do the wrong thing. Some men have pornography addictions, and so to physically touch their daughters, that's now become complicated because of the pornography they're looking at. And it makes them feel uncomfortable. So that's a downside of, obviously people in the culture don't talk about the downsides of pornography, but that is one of the downsides of pornography, is it sexualizes, it makes women or men sexual objects. And so yet another reason for sexual purity. Now, most of the women I worked with had issues with their dad. They did, a lot of them. But their bigger issues usually came in with their mom. And that's what's going to really drive that sexual attraction to women later on. So what happens? A breakdown in the affirmation of mom. Maybe mom is critical, picking, negative. Maybe the girl's got a weight problem. Maybe the mom is very controlling. And so what the little girl feels like, what she does is never right. The main breakdown, though, is going to come in this modeling of affirmation and femininity. And that can happen in a lot of ways. Maybe mom has an alcohol problem. Maybe mom has mental illness issues, severely depressed, anxiety, can't get out of bed. Whatever it is, maybe mom has sexual abuse issues, and those are really crippling her. And these are all valid things that mom might be going through, right? Maybe she has a chronic illness that makes her weak all the time, and she would love to be out and be the vibrant person she knows she can be, but she's restricted. She can't do it. Whatever it is, the little, you know, 3-year-old little girl, 5-year-old little girl, she can't look at her mom and go, mom was sexually abused. As a result, it manifests itself in the way she interacts with me and others, and I can't base my views on my own gender identity on mom's brokenness. 5-year-old little girl cannot do that. She looks at her mom and she goes, even mom doesn't like being mom. Why would I want to be like mom? And there's a little door in her heart that shuts, a little switch that flips, a little wedge that gets put in. She might not be aware of it, where she goes, it's not good to be mom, to be like my mom. And it's not safe. I don't want to be like that. Their relationship, mom and dad, is going to have a big impact on this girl. So, and again, I'm not talking about all these kids now who, through the social contagion, are saying, I think I'm bi, you know, or I think I'm non-binary. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who are like, I've always felt gay. What we would see more with older women who struggle, and one typical thing we would see more with younger women who struggle. So what we saw more with older women who struggled was controlling, abusive, distant dad, weak, passive, doormat mom. And these are very strong words I'm using, like big, heavy emotional words. And I'm using them to convey the weight of what the little girl feels and what she sees. And so what happens here? Dad, maybe he's an abuser, an alcoholic. He's just controlling. He might be a pastor, and he's actually a great guy. He's awesome. But dad is outside in the world getting all the acclaim, all of the accolades. Everybody loves dad. Mom toiling along behind the scenes, trying to keep all the kids, always harried, always stressed, never getting any glory or credit. And the little girl goes, man, she looks at the situation and goes, sucks to be mom. Why would I want to be like my mom? Like, dad has a way better role in life. Why would I want to be just slaving away behind? Even if mom relishes the role, even if mom's like, no, I love just being the stay-at-home mom and doing this and that. Like, if the girl, especially if she's a tomboy girl, strong sense of justice, will look at it and go, one plus one doesn't equal two, equals two. Why would I want to be like her when I could be like him? Whatever it is, if it's dad's role is more appealing, or she hates him, she can't stand him, she doesn't like him, he's an abuser. She looks at the masculinity of her father figure and she sees strength in it, even if it's a negative form, like in abuse. And she looks at the femininity of her mom and she sees victim. She sees weak. And she's like, this I can do. This, uh-uh. So she detaches from the femininity of her mom and she associates and identifies with the masculinity of her father figure. And this becomes her known. And this becomes her unknown or her mystery. So this is why, if you go, okay, lesbian women, if you hate men so much, why do you look like one? Why would you want to look like a man? Why are you like glad to be confusing? Wouldn't you want to be the most girly girl, the most feminine woman if you hate men so much? And it's because they grew up in a dynamic like this, where to be feminine was to be victimized. To be masculine was to have the power. And so they're identifying this and reinforcing this. This is why this other than is such an important thing to remember. She's going, I'm other than my mom. So what happens more with younger women? Here we see mom's got issues and mama rules the roost. Maybe she's bought into the feminist agenda. You know, I'm the one that wears the pants. I'm the one. You know, dad is here to serve me. Everybody's here to serve me. And she starts looking to her daughter to meet her emotional needs. So they have a very enmeshed relationship. Mama is pulling her out of school. We don't want you to have any bad influences. She's reading her journal. She's picking all of her friends. Mama is getting her needs met through the girl. So it's this all-consuming relationship for the girl. And she's like, oh my gosh, like this is the emotional experience of being in a relationship with her mom. And you might say, well, I thought there was a detachment from femininity. This looks like a connection. And it is, it's an overconnection. And the girl's like, get me out of here, this is suffocating. And so she pushes away from that relationship with her mom. And she either, you know, identifies more with dad, or he's not even in the picture at all a lot of the time. And sometimes that's why mom's trying to get her needs met through her daughter, because maybe dad's not there. These typically are your more lipstick lesbians, girls who look straight, and you wouldn't necessarily guess that they had this issue. And a lot of these women, it's like, look, they know, they've seen what it is to be controlled. They've learned from the best. So they're like, I know how to control people with my appearance of femininity, my sexuality. I learned from my mom. And so they're usually your more lipstick ones. And they will often get into relationship with the more butch lesbians. And if you look from the outside, you'd go, oh, well, the butch lesbian wears the pants, she's in control. But it's always that lipstick lesbian who's in control. She has learned from her mom how to control, and she's made a commitment. I will never be controlled by anyone ever again like I was from my mom. And then there can be a breakdown in the attention from mom. If mom invalidates her feelings, if mom has unhealthy expression of emotion, a lot of the women I worked with, they're like, man, I feel like if I start crying, I will never stop, so I will not cry. And that's because that's what they saw with their mom. It was like the emotional faucet was turned on and the handle was ripped off, and there was no stopping it. And they were always having to parent her mom. Emotionally parent. So a lot of the women I worked with, they missed out on their emotional year, their years of development where they're supposed to be receiving from their mom because they're providing emotionally for their mom. They're making sure mom's not lonely. They're making sure mom feels better. They're calming mom down. So very important for mom to be the parent in the relationship and not look to her daughter to emotionally parent her. And then, like I talked about, that physical touch, if she doesn't get it, she'll crave it later on. And then grooming habits. If she does not feel equipped to be in the world of women, she will feel very other than and separated. So how does this culminate in sexual attraction? Well, let's talk about sexual development. From 0 to 3, we're all supposed to connect deeply and intimately with our moms. This is where we develop our sense of attachment. People who have attachment issues, they had breakdowns in this period. It could be because they were adopted. It could be because mom had, you know, 4 other little kids, so she couldn't really connect to the baby. Mom could have severe postpartum depression, so she didn't connect to the baby. A lot of things could be going on, and a lot of them might not be the mom's fault at all. But healthy connection has to happen in that attachment for boys and girls. Then 4 to 10, for little girls, we're supposed to connect deeply and intimately with mom, deeply and intimately with dad, and deeply and intimately with other same-sex best friends. So like, you know, boys are gross, they have cooties, you know, they're in the He-Man Woman Haters Club. I have my best friend that I have my broken heart best friend necklace that has the B fry and the S to end on it, you know, and they have one side and I have another. And we have friendship bracelets. Like, that's so healthy for little girls. They need to feel like, I am one of the girls. I have what it takes, even if they're tomboy girls. So it's really cementing that gender identity. 11 to 16, we go through puberty and our hormones increase by several hundred percent. And so if we're firmly cemented in our gender identity as we grow with that influx of, you know, however many percentage of our hormone increase, we go to school, we're feeling good about being a girl, those hormones come, and we start noticing these other creatures we've not been paying attention to, and that's little boys. And God has created us to be drawn to that which is mysterious, mainly Him. That's why we sailed to the end of the earth and we thought we'd fall off the edge. You know, it's why we read mystery books. We want to discover. We want to know. If we find something intriguing, that's kind of a code word for, I'm kind of attracted to them. Like, they're intriguing me, right? Because we're drawn to mystery. And so when she's had all of this healthy cementing of her gender identity, the other than, the mystery, is males. And so when this hormonal increase hits, it attaches and meets with that mystery of the male, and she finds herself being attracted to boys. She didn't ask for it. She didn't choose it. She didn't wake up and say, today I shall now be attracted to men. Like, that's not what happened. She just discovers it. She feels a draw toward a boy, and that's her first crush. Mine was Joey Graff in 6th grade, if anybody was interested. What happens in the life of the struggle girl? She goes through this stage. She may or may not make it through that stage very well. But she gets to this stage, 4 to 10, and she either doesn't connect the right way with mom, dad, or same-sex best friends, and she flatlines at 4 to 10 years old. And so people who struggle with same-sex attraction historically are emotionally really 4 to 10 years old. And you might go, well, I have a gay friend and they're not immature. They might be professionally 50, physically 50. They might be brilliant, but emotionally they are trying to meet the needs of a 4 to 10 year old, which is identification and connection to that same sex. This is why if you look at the gay community, I would not describe the posture of the gay community overall as very emotionally mature. It's like, if you don't do what I want, temper tantrum forthcoming. I might try to get you canceled or fired. This is why the breakups are very tumultuous. It's not two adults going, hey, I wish you the best, I hope the best for you. When two lesbians break up, it's, I'm driving through your yard, I'm kicking at your windshield, I'm pointing a gun at you. These are all people I know personally. I don't ever have to make up or exaggerate when I'm talking about lesbian breakups because they are that tumultuous. Domestic violence, sky high in the lesbian community because you have emotional 7-year-olds trying to deal with adult feelings, adult breakup. And so they get really stunted in this age where they are longing and desiring to connect to their same sex, and it's not happening. The problem is their body keeps growing. So these girls go to junior high, and they're longing to connect. They don't feel a good connection with mom, or it's just painfully overconnected. They don't really know how to be with men, or like they don't understand that relationship so much because the relationship with dad is not what it should be. And they go to class, and they're not looking at a girl and going, wow, I want to have sex with her. No, they go and they meet a girl on our team, a coach, a teacher, and they just feel this inordinate longing to connect. They want to be seen by her, they want to be known by her, and they want to be loved by her. And then that longing continues to grow. And our emotions are so tied up in our sexuality as women that for her, the mystery for her is femininity. This is what she doesn't understand, what's intriguing, she's trying to figure out. That mystery rises up and collides with her hormonal increase, and she finds herself being erotically drawn to women. Because of the fluidity of our sexuality, it might not present itself as sexual at first. She might have a string of emotionally dependent best friends in junior high and high school and college. She gets to college and she meets the best friend. And we're Ruth and Naomi, David and Jonathan, Jesus and John, all rolled into one. It's not that we're unhealthy, it's that other people don't understand friendship like we do. It's like super intense. They're emotionally meshed. And they're connecting, and you can only go so far in connecting where you have to go one step further to get that full, all-enthralling connection. And so she crosses a sexual boundary. And then, because of the neural pathway realities in our brain, she can do things that anytime she commits an act of sexuality with a woman, it further reinforces that neural connection to attraction to women. Because of sexual abuse, that plays such a big role. Sexuality is like a switch with two positions, on and off. When we're born, it's in the off position. And once we activate it, we can't turn it off. So she's been sexualized through abuse early on. It's very hard for her to divorce sexuality from these three things. Because sex, even when in the form of abuse, to the relationally starved person, feels like affirmation, intention, and affection, even though it's defiled. And even if they can tell it's defiled, they can't divorce it because they haven't had it in the healthy way from the parents. And so, homosexuality is essentially an illegitimate way to meet legitimate needs. She has legitimate needs to connect to her same sex. It's not that she needs to never be friends with girls again. That's not a healing thing in her life. She needs lots of healthy friendships in her life. She needs to learn what healthy friendships are. She needs to have that model. She needs to have restored relationship with her parents. She ultimately needs to find healing in Christ. And we won't go into all of that because we still got to get to the guys, and I don't want to rob you all of that. But it's like homosexuality is not the problem. It's like the light on the dashboard suggesting an inner problem. She has a deeper problem. There's deeper needs going on. And she has to be reconciled to what biblical femininity is and re-embrace that for her to understand God's design for her sexuality. So what happens with the guys? They are so much easier than this. Just so don't be worried. What happens with them? Okay. They too need affirmation, attention, and affection. But it's primarily going to be from dad. So dad, mom, and little boy. He also is going to have one of two main personality types. Yes, I'm speaking in generalizations. But we're all aware of the generalities. He's either going to be a rough and tumble boy or sensitive. Again, one doesn't mean he's going to be gay or straight. Rough and tumble boys. We know what this means. You know, when you say about a little kid, he's all boy. He's rough and tumble. He's physical. He expresses his emotions through physicality. He likes the sports and the cars and the mechanical things. You know, he likes to get dirty and everything becomes a gun or a sword. Like, we know what rough and tumble boys are. And sensitive boys are different. They are a little more relationally intuitive a lot of the time. They're more aesthetically driven. You know, they'll like bright colors. They might really like mom's shoes. That doesn't mean they're a girl trapped in a boy's body. It means they're sensitive boys, and women's clothing and shoes is often far more vibrant. Does that mean dress your son up in mom's clothes because he likes bright colors? No. We need to teach him about healthy gender clothes or gender roles, but that doesn't mean he's gay. And so many times, it's just crazy to me how you'll hear people say, oh, I knew he was gay since he was 5. Why? Because he liked cooking? I mean, think of the logic of this. He likes to cook. That means he wants to have sex with a man. What are we talking about? This is insane. And you go, oh, well, he was flamboyant. Okay, well, let's talk about why that is. We'll talk about that in a second. But sensitive boys. Now, almost every struggler guy we ever had came from the sensitive category. That doesn't mean if you're sensitive, you might go, yikes, I'm a sensitive guy. No, it's not, to be sensitive isn't to be gay or gay identified. But if you have same-sex attraction, usually, if you're a male, you're going to come from the sensitive category. And really think about this. These boys are other than. They don't fit in with the other boys. It's like at least 80% of the population of males is rough and tumble. 20% or less is sensitive. It kind of depends on which study you read. And so if you have a boy who loves ballet and he's in a neighborhood full of boys who love football, he's going to be very other than. And they're going to provide him with a lot of names and labels for why he is different from them. Fag, queer, sissy, and those are some of, you know, it can get much worse from there even, right? And so he's going to be hearing these labels put on him for a long time. So dad, biggest example of masculinity. Mom, biggest example of femininity, just like with the girls. So dad needs to give the three A's. So affirmation to a male looks a little different. Doesn't need to say, you're beautiful. He needs to say, I love you, you're strong enough. You're smart enough, you have what it takes to be a man. You know, interestingly, cultures that have rites of passage for males, homosexuality is almost non-existent. Because there is a moment when all of the men in the community are coming to the boy and saying, you have what it takes to be a man. And they are blessing him and anointing him with that and raising him up to be this male. And so, you know, and I think Chris is even teaching one on a breakout on rites of passage this morning, one of Chris shared. But it's you have what it takes. It doesn't matter if you like chess instead of baseball. That doesn't matter. Like, you have what it takes to be a man. And he needs to affirm that. And dad also needs to model that. Attention, this is where we see a big difference between these two boys. Okay, rough and tumble boys, they want proximity. And sensitive boys, they want presence. This is really important. Bars are built for rough and tumble. We're side to side. You know, guys can talk about their lives, but they want to play golf or basketball. Like, they don't want to go to a Starbucks table and gaze into each other's eyes for 4 hours. Sensitive guys do. They want eyeball-to-eyeball contact. This is also why, you know, gay-identified guys or sensitive guys will often struggle with women because the women in their life will always think they're interested in them because they go and they look into their eyes for 3 hours and they connect so well and they listen so well. They're so reflective and sensitive and they're understanding me. He must like me. And the guy's like, he's totally unfazed, has no idea she feels like that, right? Because the vast majority of men are rough and tumble, so this is very different how they interact. And so that attention, dad needs to be really thoughtful about this. This is where a big breakdown can happen. If 80% of men are rough and tumble, high percentage of a chance that dad's going to be rough and tumble if the son is sensitive. So dad has to go out of his way to go, I'm going to connect with my son in ways that he receives. I might like to go to the baseball game. And yeah, that's kind of a classic example we'd use. Hey, Johnny, do you want to go to the baseball game with me and your uncle and your cousins? Well, for the rough and tumble boy, he's like, best day of my life. Me and my dad and my cousins, we were all at the game together. And the Rangers won. It was awesome. And it's like a cherished memory. Well, Bobby, the sensitive boy, he's like, I don't even like baseball. And if you knew me at all, you would know I don't like baseball. And you're not going to pay attention to me at all. You're going to be talking to uncle and cousins, and it's not really time with you. So the same invitation with the same intent and heart of the dad to connect to the son. The rough and tumble boy, it's a huge blessing. The sensitive boy views it as an insult, which is very confusing for the rough and tumble dad. He's like, I don't know what, I asked you to the game, and I asked you to work on the car with me, and I asked you to go fishing with me. Like, what's your problem? I'm trying to connect to you. And the sensitive boy's like, what's your problem? You don't understand me at all. And we talk about sensitive guys, it's like they have a magnifying glass on their life. Everything is, the emotions are bigger, the feelings are bigger. They really view things through the lens of, like, it's kind of about me. Like, if the parents are fighting, it's like, what did I do to make my parents fight, you know? And so it's really not about them at all. And so, you know, in the sinful sense, it can be self-absorbed, but in the redeemed sense, it can be they take responsibility, they're very thoughtful, they're very proactive in, like, what can I do to help in this? They're not oblivious and aloof. So with each side, there can be obvious elements of each side where we can fall into, men can fall into a ditch. So that attention, eyeball to eyeball, and the dad connecting in the way his son connects is so important, and that is on the dad. It's not on the son to figure out how to connect with dad. It's on the dad to connect with the son. And then affection, physical touch, again. And especially if he's sensitive, most rough and tumble boys, they are in team sports. So they're getting a lot of physical affection from males. There's huddles, tapping on the butt, arms on the shoulders, tackling, wrestling. That's how males get a lot of their physical affection. Well, sensitive boys, if they play sports, are usually drawn to individual sports. Diving, cross-country running, golf, something, tennis, they're not getting a lot of physical affection from other males. So if dad is doing his job, he's really reaching out and connecting to this boy. Boy's getting what he needs, loves dad, he's connecting back, sensitive or rough and tumble. But if there's a breakdown, there can be a lot of breakdown. So if dad's not in the picture, again, 18 million kids don't have a dad, right, in the home. And we've seen the statistics on fatherlessness and how just dramatically it impacts kids, particularly males. But dad's not in the picture, or maybe dad's abusive, angry, controlling. Or what often happens is dad's a rough and tumble. And he speaks rough and tumble. Son's a sensitive. He speaks sensitive. So dad's over here. He speaks rough and tumble. He speaks Greek. Very precise. If I tell you I love you, I have six words or five words or whatever to tell you that. You know exactly what I mean. Precision, clear. The boy over here, he speaks Spanish. So he's intuitive. It's more emotive, it's higher context, read into what I'm saying a little, I'm not as precise. So they're speaking two different languages, right? So the dad comes, he tries to connect, he's speaking the Greek, the boy's like, I don't know what you're saying to me, I don't want to go to your stupid baseball game, I don't want to go fishing. And so the son comes up for a connection with the dad, and it goes badly, right? So the dad feels rejected, so he pulls back. After enough invitations, he's like, I don't know how to connect with them. I don't know what to do. And the son is like, wow, my dad does not get me. He does not understand me. He's other than. Problem. We've got another person in the family we haven't talked about yet. And it's mom. And mom, guess what language she speaks? She's bilingual, because women are relators. We speak all the languages. So mom, she sees this is happening. And she's like, oh, no, I don't want Bobby to feel unloved. So she strengthens the connection. I don't want him to not have anybody. And you know what's also great is he loves to cook with me. And I love going to see him dance. And I love going shopping with him. He has great taste. And so then the son is like, oh, man, you know who really loves me? Mom. Mom is giving me so much affirmation, attention, and affection. You know what? I think I'm actually more like mom. And they get very close. So he's detaching from the masculinity of his father. That's becoming his mystery. And he's connecting with the femininity of his mom. This is his known. And so this is why when you see gay guys, it's like, why do they sashay? Not all of them. There's gay guys that it's like, their mannerisms are feminine. I mean, the way they walk is feminine. Clearly, this is innate. And it's like, no. This is the person they were watching and emulating all those years. If I watch only my mom walk, who am I going to walk like? My mom. If I talk, only connect relationally to my mom, who am I going to talk and relationally connect like? My mom. And so that's why this affect very early on. And they're being bullied at school a lot of the times for being other than, being different, being called sissy. So the other little girls are like, Bobby's being picked on. I'll be his friend. And he likes the same things I do. So it continues just over and over and over and over reinforcing this feminine in the male. And so he's disconnected from dad, overconnecting with female. So let's go to our sexuality over here. Mom, same thing for boys. Zero to three, they do need to connect deeply with their mom, develop that sense of attachment. 4 to 10, they need to connect with dad, male best friends, and they need to disconnect from mom. It's different. They really don't need to be mommy's, you know, daddy's or a mama's boy. And I know that that term is used like pejoratively, but like, no, they really need to not be mama's boys. Those apron strings have to be cut. They have to grow up into men. And a lot of moms are broken. A lot of moms had a negative, rough and tumble dad who was aggressive or abusive. So they want to like work the masculinity out of their sons. They want to train their sons to be like kind of like women. And they don't want their sons to be men because they've been wounded by men. And if you've been, if you're a mom in here and you have a little boy and like you've had a lot of like unhealthy examples of men in your life and you're trying to make sure your son isn't acting like that, okay, well, let's make sure to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're not trying to throw masculinity out with sinful behaviors. We want to bring in community and the scriptures and wise counsel and what does it mean to be a man biblically and train him up in that. And then they hit puberty in 11 to 17, or 16, and puberty, hormonal increase, massive. So healthy boy, he goes through this stage just fine, and then he is feeling this cementing of his gender identity. You know, he's not interested in girls. He's not interested in mom. Like, mom cooks me dinner and whatever, but, like, I'm connecting with dad. And then he goes to junior high, and the mystery for him is women, because he's not been connecting with them. And that hormonal increase hits him at the same time as the mystery of the girl. He sees a girl in his class. She's got long blonde hair. She doesn't stink like he does. She doesn't have peach fuzz on her face. Or, you know, she's mysterious. He's like, what is this creature? I've never been paying attention to these creatures. And it spontaneously erupts, not to get too specific, but his body reacts to this attraction. And he didn't like decide that morning that was going to happen. He felt it. He's not choosing the feelings. He can choose what he does with them. He's not choosing the feelings. And then, you know, he'll go from there, and however he channels that sexuality, if he's been raised as a Christian, or even Christians, you know, they might go Googling to understand what's happening with their bodies, which we all know where that would lead. But he can do things that further reinforce that heterosexual pattern. For the struggler kid, he maybe doesn't connect to mom the right way. He gets there. He doesn't disconnect from mom, connect to dad in the right way, or connect with healthy same-sex peers. Flat lines, 4 to 10. He goes to junior high. He hadn't been playing team sports. He has to go to PE. He has to change in the locker room. And he looks at other boys, and he sees ones that are developing faster than him. And he's like, man, if I had his arms, maybe the guys would accept me. If I had his pecs or, you know, his 5 o'clock shadow, maybe I would fit in. Maybe the guys would accept me. And that mystery rises up and collides with that hormonal increase. And he finds himself having a spontaneous feeling going on. And it might freak him out. And he might be like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And if he goes and Googles it, he's going to find a whole world of information. And so he might secretly, if he's a Christian, start going, okay, well, I'm just going to pray for the gay to go away every night, while I'm still also reinforcing these same sex pattern addictions through the neural pathways in my brain. And just I've referenced that a couple times, so I'll talk about it really quickly. In our brain, we have neural pathways that connect the neurons. When you orgasm, your brain is flooded with endorphins that associates the pleasure of the orgasm with the object of pleasure. It actually lays down a neural pathway connecting your brain. That's why sex with a spouse is so beautiful, because the more you have sex with your spouse, the more it reinforces that pathway, the larger it grows. It's like a muscle. The more you use it, the bigger it gets. Well, when we take sex outside of the boundary of covenant marriage, this object of pleasure can be anything. That's actually what a fetish is. Somebody has laid down enough neural pathways in their brain, they can only be aroused and experience the pleasure of orgasm with this object involved. So we can wire our brains to be attracted to anything. And so if they're looking at pornography or gay pornography or acting out, they can be reinforcing bad neural pathways in their brain. Now, we can't just like erase those pathways, but it is like a muscle. The more you use it, the bigger it gets. The less you use it, the smaller it gets. You can atrophy that pathway and then develop new pathways of healthy sexual connection with a spouse later on. So we actually can rewire our sexual attractions in our brain to an extent. I don't say that to say that, oh, you can just pray the gay away. I'm not saying that at all. I don't know what people's attractions are or not going to be moving forward in their life, but I do know for a fact there are how you act and how you think God tells us to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And how we think does impact how we live, how we view ourselves, and what we experience. And so, and then God can free anyone from anything. As the verse I read to you, 1 Corinthians 6, 9-11, God's been freeing people from homosexuality for thousands of years. We have people on our staff who've come out of homosexuality who are walking as healthy singles. We have people on our staff who have come out of homosexuality who are walking in fulfilling, loving marriages. And so I don't know what God's going to do in people's lives. We are out of time. Thank you for listening. If you have questions, I got 10 minutes till the next one.